And you're tuned to Talk of the Bay on KSQD 90.7 FM. I'm Rachel Ann Goodman, and really excited today to celebrate another anniversary, and that is the 95th birthday of the Giant Dipper, which, if you saw the movie Us, was called The Great Dipper, I think, misnamed. But in any case, I'm here with two people who are very intimately involved with the boardwalk and its history. I'm speaking, and I'll let them introduce themselves, with Jesse. Would you like to say your full name and title?
Sure. I'm Jesse Durant, and I'm the archivist at the Beach Boardwalk.
And?
Hi, I'm Ted Whiting. I'm the Vice President, Legacy Affairs.
Legacy Affairs. What a cool title, huh?
Yeah, I like that.
I think we should all be able to make up our titles in life.
Well, yeah.
Legacy Affairs. So I have some memories of going into the back behind-the-scenes tour of the boardwalk and seeing some very legacy things, and one of them was some old arcade games that were really old, like the first kind they ever made. Talk about the owner, Charlie Canfield, and his obsession with old things. He's not the first, of course, because the boardwalk has a lot of history. Let's just start with that, and we'll move backwards in time to the building of the Giant Dipper. But start there, because he's got this amazing collection of creepy things. I think they're kind of a little just fun, but creepy.
You know? We're not all creepy.
Not all.
But,
I'm reading Ray Bradbury right now. You'll have to forgive me.
Okay. So, no, you're correct, though. Charles has done some collecting over the years. The company is very conscious of its history, very conscious of its legacy. So there are a lot of items. There are a lot of activities, games. There's a lot of artifacts that we've just kept and held on to and collected and don't always know what we're going to do with each and every one of those, but they're important to keep because they are very much reminders of our past, our legacy, and that all of us that are down there now are carrying on a legacy and a tradition that's gone on for 112 years. So it's an important piece of who we are to keep remembering who we are.
Yeah, and people want to have fun no matter what age they live in, right? And it's not necessarily that we all need flashbang video game graphics. We can still enjoy a little surprise or a scare or, you know, something kind of magical, even if, you know, we're here in the modern era where it's hard to impress us. I think we still enjoy some old-fashioned fun.
I like to call what we do is offer simple fun.
Good.
When fun was simple.
Yeah.
Still
just like
is.
Riding a big roller coaster. Jesse, what drew you to this kind of work? Did you ever come here as a kid?
I did. I grew up in Sacramento and came here during the summers, and then I moved here to go to UCSC. And history has just always been really interesting to me, and growing up and then coming to Santa Cruz, the history of Santa Cruz is just really unique and fascinating. So the opportunity to work with the history of the boardwalk, which is such a big part of this community, was a great opportunity.
So let's go back in time, and you don't have a time machine, but we'll make one today. We haven't gotten one of those yet, but someday. So boardwalk began a while ago. What was going on in Santa Cruz? Maybe, Ted, you could start us off by setting a picture of what this town was like and how the idea for amusement park by the ocean began.
Well, the town back in the early 1900s, I would say, was fairly sleepy. And Teddy Roosevelt came to town in 1903. The city rolled out its red carpet. But in the course of all they did with the downtown, the beach area looked pretty shabby. And so a man named Fred Swanton, who was involved with our local trolley system, basically was given a franchise to build an extension of that system down to the beach, but he had to create a destination. And so it was he who was an incredible entrepreneur in that time. Probably no one like him in Santa Cruz ever since. Anyhow, he built the first casino, which was simply a place of entertainment, a place of education, a place of culture. And this all occurred in 1904. And that's what started the beach. Although there was activity before that, that's what we reckon as being the origination of what is there today. But 2 years later, in 1906, that thing burnt down, lock, stock, and barrel, to the ground. But Swanton's character was such that he rose. in those challenges. And he really began right away to commission a rebuilding project. And a year later, he had the new casino and the Nautitorium, which was the old swimming complex, open a year later in June of 1907. And that is what the two buildings that are down there now are is what's there today from that original construction. And that's how we began.
Let me ask you about the first the casino and then the Nautitorium. They're both fascinating to think about. It was legal to gamble here back then.
No gambling ever occurred at the boardwalk, as far as I know. There was a ship out at sea called the Balboa for a few years. I think there may have been gambling, although not necessarily sanctioned. But at the beach itself, there was never any gambling.
So what did the casino do?
It was a place of education. It was a place of entertainment. It was a place to go and be part of society, a place to go and to see and be seen. It actually had a fairly aristocratic kind of air to it, and it does not connote the what we think of casinos today in terms of the gambling. That was not what was going on.
Do you want to chime in, Jesse, on your view of that time? What is the Nautitorium? Do you want to talk about that? And how is that spelled? Because we're on the radio.
Nautitorium.
And it was a swimming pool?
You win the spelling bee, yeah. swimming pool.
Yeah. So it would, before the casino was built, there were bathhouses down there. People went down to the beach to swim indoors. And so this was a new, better version of the bathhouses that were down there. And so there was heated salt water, and you would be inside swimming.
And what would people's bathing suits look like?
Pretty heavy items. We have some on display, but they were woolen, and they covered most of you. And what I understand, I've never worn one. What I understand, though, is they could get pretty heavy. And so that's the nature of bathing. I mean, the whole nature of swimming, no one really knew how to swim back in the early 1900s. It wasn't part of what we did. And so it was coming out of the Victorian era, swimming, beach bathing, salt water. There was many thoughts that salt water had a therapeutic benefit. So the whole approach to swimming in water back then was a lot different than it is today.
I imagine they might have had to save some people whose suits got too heavy. There was probably the beginning of life-saving was in relation and response, perhaps, to people, A, not knowing how to swim, B, having heavy wool bathing suits on. And you have to remember, they didn't want to get tanned. They wanted to have their skin, you know, kind of protected. And that was a new thing for
That's
us to think about.
That's why all the parasols are on those old photos.
That's right.
When you look at the beach, everybody was under a parasol. And many were fully dressed, sitting on the sand. Yeah. Dad and mom and the kids. I mean, that was just life back then.
And there was a cable that you could hold on to as from the beach out into the water. So you had something to always hang on to, not get washed away.
Mm-hmm. If I remember reading right, there was also this spectacle of someone who would start from the top on a whiz line and end up in the ocean. Can you talk about some of the shows that used to happen and maybe the deep diving off into the Nautitorium that used to take place? There was a lot of water sports showmanship going on here, wasn't there back then?
Well, again, swimming, water activity was kind of a novelty. And so inside in the Nautitorium, or the plunge, it was later called, there were these water carnivals where these acrobatic acts, trick diving, some humor activities, comic relief, all surrounding the pool activity, would go on as featured shows. And those occurred weekly during the summer. And then outside, I think what you're referring to is what was called the Slide for Life, where a man by the name of Don Bosco Patterson would hold on to someone on a trapeze. He'd hang on to the trapeze with his knees, and then someone would be hanging on to him, and he would slide from the top of the casino dome all the way out to the end of this pier that used to be there called the Pleasure Pier, and they would both drop off before they hit the pier. But it was quite a stunt, and people loved watching it.
I don't know why, but I thought maybe that somebody was on fire doing that, or is that my misremembering?
So that particular event was so popular during the day that they tried a few at night. And Don Patterson was convinced to wrap himself in burlap, be soaked in gasoline, lit, and go down that cable and drop off. And
he survived.
And he survived.
I don't think workers' comp rules would cover that nowadays. Don't think you guys would have that happening.
I agree with you.
So were there spectator seats in the auditorium so you could watch these shows, or did people just stand around the outside of the pool? How did that work?
There was a second level in that building, and so people could actually go in, sit, watch from that level on all that was going on.
If you just joined us on Talk of the Bay, we're talking about the history of the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk and some of the things that went on there in the old days. And we are celebrating the 95th anniversary of the Giant Dipper, which we'll get to the building of in just a moment. And we're talking with Ted and Jesse, two people who know the history quite well of this amazing spot on Earth. Let's put it in context a little. On the West Coast, was this the only one of its kind? I know we know about Coney Island, but what are some of the other correlatives around the country that were happening around the turn of the century, the last century?
Well, just after the boardwalk, there was what became Playland at the Beach in San Francisco at Ocean Beach. That started a little later, but again, similar in terms of its entertainment perspective. And then Southern California was starting. So, you know, 1910, 12, 14, 15, the entertainment industry in Southern California was really starting to take off. Piers were being built and various entertainment meccas were developed. Of course, on the East Coast, it all started with Coney Island, and you have the beaches up and down the eastern seaboard in New Jersey and Delaware and all that was going on there. But that preceded the West Coast. But the West Coast soon followed.
Let's go to the Giant Dipper, which, how did you feel when you saw the movie Us? Have you seen it yet?
Jesse can talk
Jesse,
about it.
Jesse, tell me
I
that.
Saw it.
What did you think about the scenes at the boardwalk?
It was really interesting to see the boardwalk in that movie, in that type of movie, and kind of fun because of having gone through the filming of it and knowing what they were doing while they were here and all of that kind of stuff. So it was exciting.
Was there any deal for them to call it the Giant Dipper a different thing, or did they just decide to change it slightly?
I think that was something they just decided to change it slightly, yeah.
Unlike other movies that have taken place here, like The Lost Boys, they called it something different. But this was called Santa Cruz in the movie.
And Clint Eastwood did Sudden Impact. And I think we were Santa Carla for that.
That's Lost Boys.
Was that Lost Boys?
Mm-hmm.
Then we were somebody. We weren't Santa Cruz.
I don't know what we were.
For Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. Why do they always make horror movies here? I don't know. They should make a happy movie.
I agree. That's my philosophy.
Bumblebee. No, it's not a horror movie.
There you go. So let's talk about the building of the Giant Dipper. Let's give us some statistics about it, too, because I'm sure you have those at your fingertips. You know, biggest, oldest, all wooden. Tell us about a little bit of the history of roller coasters, because I don't know anything about it, and I'm sure our listeners probably don't either, unless they're roller coaster buffs, which maybe they are.
Well, Ted recently wrote a blog post on the origin of the Giant Dipper, and there's some really interesting stories about how it began.
The Dipper was built by a man named Arthur Loof. Arthur came from a family that ultimately began to develop amusement centers on the West Coast. His father was the carousel carver who was building merry-go-rounds and carousels. In fact, his father built a carousel that is at the boardwalk. But Arthur grew up in that family, and he branched out, and he was managing other kinds of entertainment activities that the family was doing. So roller coasters was something that he got into. And the first one, I think, that he built was up in San Francisco at what was Playland in 1922. And so he, his mindset was to, let's build one, and then I can replicate that in other locations. So he stepped out of the partnership he had there at Playland and then came to Santa Cruz in 1923 and made a proposal to replace this old scenic railway that was there with a new roller coaster for the Roaring Twenties, something bigger, faster, bolder, taller, higher, and all those kinds of superlatives. So he got the okay. So he built it. It was his ride. He built it in 1924. In May, it opened in May on May 17th, and so he ran it and had managed had a man. In fact, he even built a house for his manager and the family of the manager right there behind it. And so
must have been a rather noisy place to live.
So he built it. He ran it till 1933. And, of course, the stock market crash of 29, the recession set in, business was not robust. And he honestly was looking for lease concessions. He was looking for what he could get from the Seaside Company that was his landlord in order to improve his bottom line. The company was willing to give him a concession in rent, but they wanted him to extend his lease 5 years. And he wouldn't agree to that. And so he just said, because it was his ride, I'll just take my ride down and I'll use it somewhere else in Southern California. And the company stepped in and bought it. And so that's how the Seaside Company acquired the Giant Dipper.
I didn't really realize that it was a separate thing, that it wasn't always part of the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk Company. I thought it was always part of it. What's interesting. So I'm sure there wasn't a zoning or planning committee or commission in the city of Santa Cruz to approve this. And if there was, I imagine their rules were quite a bit different on height and a lot of things back then. Do you know anything about that relationship?
No, other than I don't think there was much.
Just happenstance.
Like we know those things to be today.
Right, exactly. We'll get to, you know, where things are today in a moment, but we're still in the past. Safety record, height, records of number of rides. What are some of the fun numbers that you might have at your fingertips? I don't want to put you on the spot, just in case you don't have them.
But. Well, we are at 66 million riders, and we're the fourth oldest continuously operating at its same location roller coaster in the United States.
That's wooden.
Well, yeah, no, those are wooden.
That's a pretty good record when you think about it. 66 million people have ridden that thing. Anyone ever fallen off?
Fallen, no, but there have been some accidents, none of which were due to mechanical failure, but thankfully, not many, and the rides run pretty safe. Its track record for safety is real strong. Of course, the company maintains it really, really well, and it is the oldest wooden roller coaster on the West Coast.
What's the difference between a wooden roller coaster, you know, for those uninitiated, and a metal or steel or something else roller coaster?
The difference is in what you can do with steel track. The first steel roller coaster was the Matterhorn ride at Disneyland. And when that technology was developed and perfected by the Morgan Manufacturing Company, it revolutionized what you could do with gravity rides. So now you could twist them and turn them and put them into corkscrews and circles and do things that you just can't do with a wooden coaster. So it's that's the difference.
Let's talk about why roller coasters are so scary and how they work. Jesse, you want to talk about, how many times have you ridden it, by the way, Jesse?
Lost count. I don't know, a lot of times.
As an employee, to get to ride them endlessly if you want to?
If I wanted to, yeah.
Has anyone ever set the record for individual rides?
That I don't know.
You know, I bet you there's someone who would claim to have, but I can't say with certainty that there has been.
So let's go back to how they work. I know for me, the few times I've ridden it, the suspense is part of the thrill. It's the click, click, click. I mean, most of us would immediately know what I'm talking about there. Yeah. What's the rise as you're getting toward the top? What's the height that you're getting pulled up
about
to?
About 70 feet.
So getting slowly pulled to 70 feet up in the air is scary enough, you know, thinking about gravity and all that.
Right.
So what's the physical, if these aren't company secrets, what's going on there, the mechanics of the ride to get you up there in the first place? And how much weight? It's pulling a lot of people. I mean,
well, so there's a motor that's pulling a chain, and the chain is pulling the coaster up the hill. The clickety-clack you talk about are what's called dog legs underneath the coaster train. They're such that if that train were to stop on that hill, it would lock in place. So it prevents the train from actually coming back on that lift. Once you get over the lift and over the hill, it's gravity all the way back to the station. So that's it's a pretty simple ride from that point of view.
And does it run on electricity?
Or, yes. Oh, yeah.
Did it used to run on something different, steam or anything else?
No, I think it's always been electricity.
Yeah. So it's all gravity. And what's the speed that you get up to going around some of those corners?
55 miles an hour is what we basically say. We've timed it over the years, but I think around 55 miles an hour.
Going down the steepest part?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's amazing. And it goes around twice?
Right.
So you get two?
It's called a double out and back roller coaster.
Nice. And how many people get to fit in that first, and all the cars all in one run?
24 passengers in each. There's two trains, 24 passengers in each.
Yeah. That's amazing. So congratulations on the 95th birthday. We're talking to Ted Whiting and Jesse Durant. They're both from the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk, the Seaside Company, talking about the 95th anniversary of the Giant Dipper. I don't know how many people have referred to it as the Big Dipper, but I'm sure a lot of people. I worked once at Año Nuevo, and people used to come up and ask me where the elephant seal rides were.
Oh, wow.
Said, you don't want to.
I do think Luke's coaster at Playland was called the Big Dipper.
Yeah.
Oh. Ours is the Giant Dipper.
Right. And you also, I have to say, have one of my scariest childhood memories, because I grew up in the Bay Area and went a couple of times as a very young child to Playland. And I remember Laughing Sal, which is now at the Boardwalk.
Right.
You want to talk about that historic relic and why some people are terrified of her?
Oh. Well, after Playland closed in 1972, I think it was, she was bought by a collector and kept in a museum that very few people ever got into. And when that collector died, she was auctioned along with everything else he had. And Charles Canfield, our president at the time, became aware and, of course, knew Sal and recognized Sal's significance for what she did. She was a shill to draw people's attention to the funhouse at Playland. And there were other Sals around, but she was our Sal. And so anyhow, he decided to bid on her. He acquired her, and we weren't sure what we were going to do with her. But we got her and brought her to town. And we actually then put her on display. We did a press release. There was a weekend, I think it was in June, the years that we got her. And we were amazed at how many people came to see her. Her name recognition in the Bay Area was huge. So that convinced us then we really needed to give her a new dress and period perfect, but a new dress and actually a new stage for her and give her some good prominence. And that's what we did.
But I don't think you ever volumized her to the extent that the Playland people did, because that's what was scary. She had a horrific laugh. I mean, really, I thought it was scary. I heard rumors that maybe it was recorded in a brothel or something, that the just gut laughter of this kind of ogress looking person, I have to say. Maybe these are just childhood memories. I should look at her again and give her another chance. It's just not fair. But she was kind of terrifying. You don't have her that loud.
Well, no, but one, I've heard that in San Francisco, you could hear her blocks away.
Imagine
at certain
living
times.
Across the street.
And at the boardwalk, we can control her volume. But you're right. I mean, some people are attracted to her and start laughing with her, and there are some folks, and young kids in particular, that are scared to death of that maniacal laugh. In fact, I think Clint Eastwood did use her in one of his Dirty Harry movies in a maniacal kind of way, and she just has that reputation.
What's cool is they got the original sound file and they still use it.
So yeah.
That's really amazing, and it is a real person laughing. So, well, in the little bit of time we have left, do you have any final thoughts on this anniversary and how you're going to celebrate it, perhaps?
Yeah. Yeah, so to celebrate the Giant Dipper, we're having a contest that you can enter at dipper.beachboardwalk.com. And there's various categories, under 14 and over 14, and then photography, fan art, or other. And you can just submit your tribute to the Giant Dipper, whatever it may be.
What's the prize?
So the grand prize is a 15-inch MacBook Pro laptop and a Bose Bluetooth speaker and a wireless charging station and a behind-the-scenes tour at the boardwalk.
That's cool. Wonderful. Well, I want to thank you both for being here.
Can I mention one more thing?
Yes.
For people that are interested in boardwalk history, a little over a year ago, we began writing a historical blog. And you can find it at blog.beachboardwalk.com. There's about 30 of them that have been written on various elements of the boardwalk and the history of that, and we're continuing to keep doing that. And so I think if there are folks interested, that would be a great resource for them to click on and see what's there.
Well, I want to thank you both for being here. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Yeah, it was fun.
Great to have you. This is K-Squid. I'm Rachel Ann Goodman. I've been speaking with Ted Whiting and Jesse Durant from the Santa Cruz Seaside Company.